This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter, at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's N-O-N-S-E-Q, show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Take it away.
What's up, y'all? We're having a feminist talk tonight. Anita Sarkeesian is their god on occasion. Oh, video games and something. This song's really out of date. Gamergate was a long time ago, and I don't know if it's still relevant. Don't talk about feminism because I'll eventually get my head bitten off by the feminists in the comment section. I'm blocked by Steve Shives. Everybody's blocked by
Steve. I just want to say that since you said his name, GE, now everybody watching is blocked by Steve Shives. So blame
damn. Blame for that. Y'all are welcome.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kyle. KC, as always.
Hi, y'all.
Is here.
Welcome to Ideology. This is my show, not Steve's.
And we have Nate Talks to You back again. It's good to see you, Nate. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. And we are waiting on MRAS. KC, do you want to give them an update on the feminist next door?
Oh, she'll be here. She was waiting on her train. It was late, so she should be here in the next 10 minutes or so.
So we're just going to go through what we've got coming up for the week, and Casey's going to do, I believe, a thing on sponge cake. You'll find out why that's relevant.
We're going to do the National Calendar Day thing.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll just talk to Nate and see what he's been up to until Feminist Next Door jumps in. Yeah. So, coming up for the week, starting with tomorrow, Niels from the Netherlands, really nice guy. He found a box of tapes, original tapes from NASA. It has all kind of data in it, photos, videos, and he bought that on auction. The gentleman, it was found in his basement, and he had passed away, but he used to be an engineer at NASA. So we're going to go through all of that stuff that he's got. It's fascinating. That'll be tomorrow at 8 p.m. Next Monday, we've got Digital Hammurabi joining us to go through the Epic of Gilgamesh. That's Dr. Joshua Bowen. That will be at 8 p.m. on Monday. Skip ahead to Wednesday. And we have Hugo and Jake from the Bible Reloaded going to be with us. That's going to be really cool. We're going to be talking about Jonah and the whale. So make sure you're here for that. That's also at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then on Thursday, Armored Skeptic will be with us. And Nate, have you ever heard of a thing called transvestigation?
Transvestigation. Oh, yeah, I heard about that on Twitter. Yeah, there's this weird community online where people try to look at your jawline or your hand size and claim that you're actually a secret tranny, right?
Yes. Absolutely. I have asked our guests every show for the past like week if they've known what this is. You're the only one that knew what it was. But Armored Skeptic's latest video was it touched a little bit on this, and we're gonna ask him in more depth about this phenomenon. I think it's fascinating that they actually think the devil did it. That this is the devil's work. So, what could go wrong?
The devil is like turning people into men, or what?
Yes, and men into women. I believe the one that I saw showed John Travolta. They were going through how John Travolta used to be a woman, and has not. But I mean, women are in Greece. He was, and what was the other one?
Where the
Bee Gees song? No, it was disco. The disco one.
Oh, Saturday Night Fever.
Man. Yes, yes. Man or woman, he killed in those two. So. You just do you, John Travolta, man or woman. So then that next Friday, Parallax Nick runs a channel. He is going to be going through the evidence for Planet Nine next Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And I think that's all of the ones that yes, you can check us out on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google, iTunes. We just peaked over. We're at 110,000 downloads on that since we've been on iTunes for the past couple weeks. So that's really cool. Thank you guys for supporting us there. And if you just want to listen to the show, you can do that on any of your favorite platforms. Okay, KC, do you want to tell us what special day it is?
Yes. So we, on the side, kind of work with the National Day Calendar people. And today, August 23rd is National Sponge Cake Day. It's also, what did I say, National Ride the Wind Day, but that's kind of weird and not as interesting as it sounds. So
not at all.
We're going to learn a little bit about sponge cake. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Are y'all ready? Okay.
Ready.
So sponge cake is one of the trickiest cakes for bakers to master because it's supposed to stand tall and have a fine crumb while remaining moist. It's often served with fresh whipped cream and berries, and it layers well. It's believed to be one of the first non-yeasted cakes, and it is also believed to have originated in the Caribbean. The earliest English printed recipe for sponge cake is in the 1615 book of English poet and author Gervase Markham, and that book is called The English Huswife, containing the inward and outward virtues which ought to be in a complete woman. So a complete woman should be able to make the perfect sponge cake, in case anybody was wondering. Which is perfect for feminism. Sponge cake. I've never made a sponge cake. I make cheesecake. Yeah.
It's
so
very good,
actually. So Kyle, did you already eat your sponge cake? Mm-hmm. So if any of y'all don't know, I live in Alabama. And I called around to the grocery stores to try to find sponge cake, and nobody has sponge cake. So I am having Alabama sponge cake. Can you see this? Mm-hmm. A Twinkie. It's a Twinkie. But I put it on a plate and I'm eating it with a fork because I'm not a thought.
Oh, so, shots fired, Shannon. There you
go. Sponge cake.
Shots fired, Shannon.
Cool. Well, and I'm going to follow it with tea. And I'm going to follow it with tea in my brand new mug. Can you see this? Don't be a salty bitch.
Don't be a salty bitch. You wouldn't have a shtick then. I thought that was your whole shtick.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not really salty, though. I'm just a bitch.
That's true. That's true. So let's switch gears and find out what Nate's been up to. Nate, how have you been, sir? It's been like a month, I think. A little over a month since we saw you last.
Well, as of late, I'm working on a new video about Zakir Naik. Are you familiar with him?
I don't think so.
Zakir Naik is a very popular Indian Islamic preacher. He has millions, millions of followers. He fills up entire stadiums of people. And he essentially is kind of like an Islamic version of a televangelist. So I'll be going through some different clips of him throughout the years because he'll say things like, evolution is only a theory. He'll claim that eating pork, you know, that pork in Islam is haram. He claims that eating pork will turn you into a cuck. So yeah, he has some very unique beliefs. What else does he claim? He claims that the Quran predicts the Big Bang happening, and just a whole deluge of other ridiculous kind of that, which I'll be going through and debunking in my video about him. It'll be my second Muslim logic fail video.
Oh, branching out to a new series. I like it. Is he the guy? Is he the guy that wears like an orange? Oh, go ahead.
I said he's. I've already made a Muslim logic fail before. There's this one Muslim YouTuber called, man, what is his name right now? It's been so long. Anyway, there's this one popular Muslim YouTuber. He made a video called like 9 mind-blowing miracles of Allah. And I went through his video and I just went through how all of his miracles really aren't all that miraculous and how science can explain what's actually going on here.
Cool. Is the guy that you were talking about just a second ago, does he wear like an orange robe almost? Goes on Jim Baker show sometimes?
No, I don't think so. Normally, Zakir Naik just wears a typical suit and tie. Oh, yeah, I'm thinking of Adam Saleh is the name of the YouTuber I was talking about. But anyway, going back to Zakir Naik, yeah, Zakir usually just wears a normal suit and tie in his speeches and everything.
There's one guy that he's a actually, I think this guy's Indian, but he goes on Jim Baker's show all the time. He always wears this like orange robe. And the few times that I saw him, he's famous for predicting the hurricane that hit Texas in Houston this past time. It was like 4 years ahead of time, but he said that if America allows gay marriage to pass, then we'll be drowned in some other kind of like prophecy or whatever. But people follow it for that very reason, because they think that he predicted the great hurricane of Houston. So,
yeah, I know that over in Texas, you know, the evangelical movement is still going strong over there. I'm not very familiar with the Jim Baker show, but I have seen. You ever heard of Vic Berger?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He's hilarious.
Yeah, I've loved watching his little compilation videos, how they try to shill out these like big buckets of, I guess, like really crappy food to their followers. And it's just the most like topsy-turvy environment ever. I don't know how people can look at that and say, these people are sane human beings. It's crazy.
Well, he got famous because in the 90s, it was 80s or 90s, he was like the number one televangelist. And they got him for like tax evasion. He went to prison for, I think, 20 years, somewhere around there. He was in prison for a long time. And he got out.
What is it with
and
these people? They're always getting caught for tax evasion. The same thing happened with Kent Hovind, who's been on your show before.
Yep. Kent went for structuring. He didn't think that the government had any right to the money, that it was forgotten work, and you know, that was that. But Jim, it happened with Jim because Jim slept with a lady called Jessica Hahn in a hotel in the, I believe it was Colorado. And after that came out, people started like looking at him very closely, and then they found out about the tax thing and he went to prison. But when he got out, he got a show back. Still went straight back to TV. And instead of, I guess, asking for money outright, he decided that he was going to go after it with the bucket thing. And an interesting thing, Casey, listen to this. Jim Baker sells these buckets, like these huge buckets full of this freeze-dried food in case like doomsday comes and you need to, you know, have food or whatever.
Yep.
Interesting anecdote. My neighbor actually ordered a whole case of these things. 8 buckets came on a pallet, FedEx. I watched them unload. It had Jim Baker's face all over the side of the box. It was hilarious. But
was it ironic, or did he like legit believe Jim Baker's stuff?
He was being serious about it. He's one of those, like, he thinks that eventually the government's going to get so big that it clamps down, and when that happens, everybody's going to, you know, run amok, and it's going to be doomsday. So he's a doomsday prepper. I need to ask him to come on here. That would be awesome to talk to him. I don't know if he will though. but Jim Baker has created these custom bucket lids that acts like a toilet seat. And he actually did an episode on his show about these, because he says that when the, you know, the lights go out and there's no more power, you're going to need somewhere to go to the bathroom. And so he has these toilet seats that it's the actual top of the bucket. So you clamp it down after the food's out and you just lift the seat up. That's not me being funny. That's 100% true.
and you use the bucket as a toilet?
Right.
So he sells food / shit buckets.
Yeah, food and a porta potty, all in one.
He's just a humble bucket merchant. Alex Jones has the water filters, and Tim Baker has the buckets.
The Geek Room did awesome. The Geek Room covered that too. So yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, so did Vic. Well, Vic Berger. That's what reminded me of, because Vic Berger did a one of his funny videos where he like zero in on that episode, and one of the lines that Jim Baker used was, "What are you going to do with the poo poo?" So yeah,
I just find it sad that people have been going along with the doomsday stuff for so long. There's actually a Wikipedia article which documents all these predictions going back for the past like 2,000 years, and how again and again and again you have different pastors and different saviors claim that, you know, it's going to be right around the corner. But then here we are still today. Nothing's fucking happened. And people still believe it continuously.
Yep. I think there's a new one, I believe. Or are we just passed it? Dave, do you know? I can't remember who it was. Dave, weren't we talking about that one time? How there's a new date of a new doomsday?
Oh, there's always a new date.
I was going to say, once one date passes, there's always a new date out there. Somebody will come up with the next doomsday, the next doomsday. I was born in 72, so I've been through like 12 of the things since I was born. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they're like every year now.
Just have a drunken live stream. Every time there's a doomsday prediction, just have a drunken live stream and just laugh at everybody who's believing this type of stuff.
We should do that. That would be awesome. Let me tell you my story. When Y2K was about to happen, everybody remember that? The Y2K thing, like all the computers are going to set to zero because it can't handle, and everything's going to shut off, and that's going to be the end of the world. I was still a faithful believer then, 100%. And so our church at that time was having a Y2K night in case God came back. So they, you know, everybody brought food and, you know, you had your fellowship. And then about 11 o'clock, everybody went into the sanctuary of the church. And, you know, we were all just kind of talking amongst ourselves and whatnot. And then about 15 till, it just got quiet. I mean, it, like, nobody said anything. And we were all just sitting there staring up at the clock, waiting for it to tick down to midnight. And I remember, like, myself feeling horribly scared. Like, I was legit terrified that, you know, Armageddon was going to happen at noon, or not noon, midnight. And the clock struck 12. Everybody held their breath. It got to be 5 after 12. Nothing happened. And I was like, did we really just do all of this for nothing? I mean, it just went over into the year 2000. There wasn't any kind of pickups. The planet went on as it always does. And I just felt stupid.
You know, I remember did you or anybody else in your church, like, take a step back and say, hey, maybe everything we believed in was absurd and maybe I should rethink my life? Or did they all just like find some way to rationalize it in their mind and continue on with what they were doing?
Oh, of course not. It was that Jesus, we all knew Jesus, just decided that it wasn't our time yet. He had a plan. He looked down and said, you know what? I'm going to give them a little bit more time. And off we went. So isn't that how it works out?
Have you seen the Alex Jones Y2K radio podcast they did back in when I was going?
No.
No.
Oh, I'd recommend you look this up. Look up like Alex Jones Y2K sometime, and it's Alex is spewing all these false predictions about all the banks shutting down, how Vladimir Putin's going to take over the country, and, you know, just trying to find anything he could say to make people run for the hills. And then, sure enough, nothing happened. But just like with your church, all of his believers, all of his conspiracy theorist followers just ignored what happened and just continued believing Alex after that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, in fairness, Alex Jones did get one of those right. Vladimir Putin eventually took over the United States. That is true.
He was like a decade early for that one, though.
You know what I did for Y2K?
Fair enough. What'd you say, Dave?
You know what I did for Y2K? I went out and bought an ounce of weed and made four quarter ounce blunts, Kyle. I think you'll appreciate the gravity of that.
I wish that was the way that mine went. Instead, I had my head down praying, like, if it comes, just make it come quick. Because I'm one of those people, like, I don't want to suffer. You know what I mean? I'm a baby like that. It's a good thing that I'm not in the military or anything where I know secrets. Because if somebody got me, I would sing like a canary. Because there's no way I would be able to keep that stuff in. I'm not built for that. So in my prayer, I was like, if Armageddon comes, just make me go quick. I don't want to linger. But yeah, it never came.
Now, what did you think Armageddon would look like? Would it be like some big fiery explosion? Would you just disappear and show up in heaven or hell? Or what would that look like?
What we were told is that we would be called up before that any of that happened. Now, nobody knows what called up means and how you're going to go.
Raptured.
You know. Yeah, that's the term. But I mean, do you just I remember. Go ahead.
Well, here's the important question. Did your church remember to build a rapture hatch in the ceiling?
No. I'm almost scared to ask, what is a rapture hatch?
Oh, my God. Kyle, look up rapture hatch. Hold on. Let me see if I can get it. Hold on.
Was like lemon party or what was that? Lemon? There's that horrible thing with the...
You build it in the roof of the house. Hold on.
Well, while you're looking that up, we...
Shit. Can you see? No?
A little bit.
You know why?
144 on my end, so I can't see it exactly. It's like a little door on the top of the house.
Right.
It's a door in the top of, like, it's a rapture hatch. It's a rapture hatch. Can you see a little better? There's Jesus in this. Just Google it. Fucking Google it, Kyle.
Is that a real thing though? Because it seems like if you're going to be raptured,
of course it's not a real fucking thing.
Okay, good. Yeah, but you know what? Though it wouldn't surprise me if it was. That's how off the planet is. But I'll tell you this: when we were when I was in church, we used to watch these movies called Left Behind and read these books called Left Behind. And basically, it paints a rapture that if you're going down the highway, right, and you're not saved, you're going to see all of these cars start veering off the road, school buses that are being driven. If the person's saved, they get raptured up. The school bus goes off the curve. Basically, wherever anybody is, if they get called up, they go up, and the rest of the world goes on about its daily life. So there'll be cars everywhere. Machines that were operated by people who were saved will, you know, just be going crazy because there's nobody there to operate it.
Crash.
You hear the bugle
don't
or
they
the trumpet.
There will be sirens or trumpets going off during this event.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yep. The angel will sound the trumpets, and I remember. It's so funny looking back on your on your Christian self, but I remember being at I was outside of a stadium in Wake Forest, and. It was during the day, like there wasn't anything going on. It wasn't like a football game or anything, but there was a band practicing in the stadium. So I hear all these trumpets and I'm like, oh man, maybe it's time. Maybe we're being called.
Yeah. Thankfully my Christian upbringing was not that radical. I was raised Christian Methodist and I had a pretty moderate upbringing. There was no story about the sirens or rapture. It was just more like, you know, basic Bible stories, Noah's Ark, the story of Jesus. But I guess around middle school, I kind of began getting more agnostic. And then I discovered the atheist YouTube community. I began watching videos from people like D.P.R. Jones, The Amazing Atheist, and Qualia Soup and Theremin Trees. And those kinds of videos really made me just take a step back and say, you know what, this doesn't add up. And this book is pretty immoral.
Yeah. How long have you been on YouTube now? It's been a while, hasn't it?
I've been on YouTube just in its entirety since about 2009, but I did not begin the Nate Talks to You channel until 2010. My previous videos are, they're all pretty cringy. I made like webcam music videos. I did Let's Plays where I point the camera at the TV screen. So yeah, looking back, that was not working out. So I said, you know, the equipment I have right now, I better just stick to ranting. And then I just kind of built up off of that and increased production value, refine my arguments. And here I am now.
Yeah. Cause you got a huge following now. How many people are you up to subscriber wise?
Right now I'm at like 195,000, and thankfully my last video got me like I think another 4K, so that was a big boost. And hopefully my next video on Zakir Naik will get that much attention. The thing about YouTube is that. Sorry, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, while we're like talking about your channel and stuff, I did look you up because before this I had never heard of you. Sorry. When you did a blackface video.
Oh, yes. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. That is probably my most controversial video. So, yeah, a couple months back, I made a video called Is Blackface Racist? And the gist of my argument was that blackface is not inherently racist. It depends on the context in which it's being used. So a prime example of blackface being racist would be if you look at minstrel shows from the 1800s or early 90s where they're trying to make black people look dumb, idiotic. That is obviously racist behavior. However, if you look at a person just trying to cosplay as a black anime character or as a black TV show character, they're not trying to clown. They're just trying to look the part. They're trying to play for Halloween or for a play. I would not consider that racist because there is no intent to try to put down black people as a whole in that usage.
Well, you know, Robert Downey Jr. did that in Tropical Thunder. And I don't remember him getting a lot of. Let me ask you this first. How much flack did you get for that video? Did it get struck?
Surprisingly, no, it didn't get struck, and I thought I'd get a lot more backlash for it, but I mostly got positive feedback. However, there is a certain corner, I guess the SJW side of YouTube, that did get pretty pissed off at me, and they tried doxing me and everything. But that was pretty much a failed attempt at the end of the day. Nothing really came out of it that severely harmed me or my channel. So, yeah, fuck them. That video is still up.
Hello, Emraz. Hello, Emraz. How are you?
Oh, Emraz is here.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me? Welcome to the show.
Sorry.
Welcome to the show.
I'm so sorry I'm late.
That's okay.
That's all Welcome. Right.
And now what we'll do, since you're here, is we will we'll let you guys introduce yourselves and tell everybody where they can find you, you know, if they want to see or hear more. And then we will get started with the topic tonight. So, Nate, do you want to go first and just let everybody know where they can follow you, see your videos, that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. So on all my social media, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Patreon, everything, I just go by Nate Talks to You, all one word, Nate Talks to You. I mostly make videos, rant type videos, talking about politics, recent news stories, religion, just anything that's interesting to me at that time I'll talk about. So yeah, if you want to see more of my stuff, just look up Nate Talks to You and you'll find my channel.
Awesome. And the Feminist Next Door, do you want us to call you Emraz? Is that cool?
Yeah, that's probably easier.
Okay. All right, Emraz, go ahead and let everybody find you.
Sure. So this is actually my YouTube debut. So I don't have a YouTube, but you can find me on Twitter at Emraz. And my Twitter handle is Feminist Next Door.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's okay. Also on the screen.
Yes, everybody's Twitter handle is on the screen for you guys. So, Nate, do you want to go ahead and start us out by answering the question, is feminism a necessary movement in order to invoke change in society? What do you think?
Well, I know that Emraz on Twitter described me as being a rabid anti-feminist, but I actually do believe that feminism is important in society. If you look in Iran, for example, there is a protest going on where women are trying to protest mandatory hijab. It's called White Wednesday. And I think that is a beautiful example of feminism being used by society to counter what is an actual patriarchy in the Middle East. So I totally applaud what they're doing over there. And even in the Western world, I think there are examples where feminism today is still useful. So, for example, while rape has gone down since the 90s, it is still a problem. I think that there's still more work to be done there. Domestic abuse tends to affect women more than men, although men are affected as well. And I'll go so far as to say I think that there may be some truth to the gender pay gap. Not as much as feminists usually say, but I think to a degree there is a bit of a pay gap, possibly. So, yeah, that's my two cents on feminism right now. But well, one more thing I'll say is that my YouTube videos, while they are very critical of feminism, I'm not trying to attack feminism as a whole, just what I perceive to be the negative elements of it. I think that in some ways the modern feminist movement is very bad at their messaging, and I think that in some ways they are anti-science. So, yeah, there's my two cents there.
Okay. Imraz, after you go, Imraz, with your opening and responding to Nate, we're going to let you guys kind of have a fluid, organic conversation where we'll just take a step back and let you guys kind of talk and ask each other questions and that sort of thing, and we'll jump in if it gets, you know, kind of off the rails. Just don't talk over each other so that everybody can hear what everybody's saying, and yeah, we'll go from there. So Imraz, whenever you're ready.
Sure. So I think first of all, I'm surprised, Nate. I expected you to be a little bit more anti-feminist, as you aptly quoted me. Which is what I took from some of the videos that you posted. But I think that you make a lot of good points in terms of what some of the critical elements are of feminism currently. A little about my perspective. So the thing that I think is most important for people to understand, very, very broad movement, and it includes lots of different types of people. And as feminism progresses and as women move forward in the West, it has become increasingly personal. So a lot of people feel as though feminism really just means achieving their own liberation. And what that lends to is that sometimes people identify as feminists, but they don't speak for the movement. So I take... your point is well taken in terms of some of the representations, I think, that I see commonly. But my feeling about feminism is that what I see lacking most right now, and I take this from my own perspective and from what I've seen with others, is that we're still really focused on a male point of view when it comes to approaching questions about difficult issues. So when we're trying to address a social issue like domestic violence or rape or immigration, if we continue to go at it from a male point of view and you suggest an alternative or you suggest an alternative interpretation, what you will find is it's always viewed as the alternative instead of just, and what that means is that it's second place. And so I find often when I have an interpretation of the way something is happening or the way something is perceived, that my view of it is considered secondary, or it's an alternative view to what the mainstream is, and the mainstream is always male. So I think that's the number one issue that we're still facing and why feminism is necessary, because female perspectives are just never primary in the United States or anywhere in the West.
Well, wouldn't you consider the Me Too movement happening right now in Hollywood, and I guess also in the Catholic Church as well, an example of the female perspective being put first?
You know, actually, that may be true, although I would prefer that not be the case with Me Too. Because Me Too is intended to be an inclusive movement that has to do with recognizing victims of sexual assault. And that means male victims and female victims. So I actually typically don't like when people associate Me Too as a primarily female movement, because I think it isolates male victims who have every opportunity to participate and should participate. And it also... to my detriment, often on social media, leads to the perception that feminists and women who are participating in the Me Too movement don't care about male victims because it is portrayed as a female movement. So that's one instance where I think I would actually prefer not to identify that movement as female. And I think really, I don't know that perspectives need to be identified as female, because my perspective is egalitarian in nature. So I don't want women's views to be primary. I just don't want them to be considered secondary.
I'm not sure where else to go off on that. I don't find much to disagree with there. I think I mostly disagree with, I mostly agree with what you said there. But could you give more examples of where the female perspective is not addressed?
Sure. So, okay, here's an example that I see a lot on Twitter, for example, is this idea that women need to either be totally covered in terms of their clothing in order to be respected, or alternatively, you have this feminist liberation movement where you have a lot of, you know, naked pics, bikini pics, a lot of discussion about really sexualized topics, and this idea of, like, I want to be promiscuous too, because men can be promiscuous, and I want to have the same opportunity to do that. And the pushback on that is, well, how can you demand respect if you're doing these things? But then if I'm dressing more modestly to demand respect, then I'm also abiding by a male stereotype of what respect demands. And I think the overarching theme there is, again, it's approaching what women are doing with their bodies from a male perspective. So whether someone's wearing clothes or not, it's not a question of what that means to someone else. It's whatever that person wants to do. I'm sorry?
Couldn't this also be applied to men as well? I mean, for example, if I were to go in for a job interview just wearing a tank top, maybe I had some tattoos and piercings, I would imagine that I would be judged as well by my employer or just in the public eye in general. If you look at different rap artists and they usually have tattoos or colored hair, people look at them as being disgusting. I mean, I don't see how what you're describing is particularly unique to women.
Well, I mean, I think the context that you just described has a secondary layer to it, which is professionalism. But I think in general, when you see women trying to exercise autonomy over their own bodies, the pushback is always from a perspective of what a woman is supposed to look like. And then there's a counter pushback of, well, fine, I don't have an issue with you looking like that, but then how can you be upset with me when I don't respect you? And I think it's missing the point entirely. I mean, for instance, like every anti-feminist, like truly anti-feminist meme is always a woman who's overweight with purple hair, you know, no makeup. Like that's the stereotype, because it's what's perceived from a male perspective as being exceedingly unattractive. And I think what I'm trying to say is when women are expressing themselves, like they can decide to be slutty if they want to be slutty. They can decide also that they prefer to dress more modestly because that's how they feel comfortable. And neither one of those things need to be perceived as modest or immodest. They're just the way that person dresses. You know, professionalism aside, I don't know that it would necessarily apply like in a work context, but I just feel like...
But don't a lot of women also judge each other too?
Sure, of course.
I think we're having a bit of echo on our end. I was going to say, don't a lot of women also judge each other in the workplace or just in public in general regarding how they look? It isn't only men judging women's clothing, right?
That's absolutely right. And I think that women are using... I hear the echo too. I think women are using male stereotypes to judge each other.
I think, can I cut in for just a second? I think it's not just necessarily only judging. I mean, there's also the whole idea of sexualizing women. And I do understand that sometimes men are sexualized, but never to the extent that women are. Judging is different from sexualizing.
I think it could be that women's sexual desires are different than men's, where women tend to prefer things like biceps and abs, and they don't like to go full and out with their sexuality the way men usually do. I think it's just that women and men's brains are wired differently, and the things they're interested in looking at are different.
Well, that's true, but I think the point that is being made is that if a woman decides that she wants to dress in a miniskirt and a bra top, she should be able to do that without also having the assumption that she's willing to have sex with whoever wants to have sex with her, because she's dressed in a way that our society perceives as being promiscuous or, you know, slutty or whatever, however you want to describe it. Because it's true that men can have tattoos or, you know, piercings, and or they can, you know, wear skinny jeans or baggy jeans or whatever. But rarely, outside of maybe racialized stereotypes, do you have a scenario where the way that a man dresses impugns some motive or non-motive onto his desires and actions, the way that it does with women.
Would you agree that we've made progress over the past several decades regarding this topic?
Yes, absolutely.
Because, I mean, I can look back to the 1950s. Sorry, go
ahead, guys.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you look back. All right, go ahead.
A little bit of it. No, I was going to go in a different direction. So if you have something to tail in on that, you go right ahead, Nate.
I was going to add in, like, if we look back to film from the 1950s and 60s and see how women's attire was shown back then, usually very long skirts, arms were covered, cleavage was rarely ever shown. And compared to now, I mean, women are obviously much more allowed, I guess, by society and culture to wear more provocative clothing, more open clothing. So I'd imagine in the next decade or two, we're going to see this progress continue.
Yeah, I would agree with that, except to the extent that I think society's willingness to see more of women has also led to a much greater instance of women's sexualization in all elements of media. So I think it's certainly possible that within a decade or two, we'll reach a point where women feel comfortable wearing whatever is appropriate, you know, for the setting that they're in and their own personal style. But it will require us to stop putting Catwoman in a skin tight leather suit and Batman in like a muscle outfit. You know, like we have to get over that, I think.
So you have an issue with movies having sexualized superhero characters?
I wouldn't say that I have an issue with it so much as I don't understand why it's necessary or why there's such a distinction. You know, I mean, if Superwoman is supposed to be a superhero in the same way that Superman is, shouldn't she also be, you know, muscular and wear something that she could actually move around in and like shoes she could run in? You know, I understand that in all film characters are attractive, male characters are attractive as are female characters, and you know, Batman has chiseled muscles or whatever. But it just seems like sometimes we sexualize these characters to the point of impracticality. Like, it just is not even necessary.
I would imagine it mostly has to do with marketing. People know. You got that demonic screech coming through again through the microphones.
I don't know where it's coming from.
I'd imagine it mostly has to do with business perspectives. These companies realize that, hey, if we make Superman more muscular, if we have Catwoman wearing a skin-tight outfit, this will bring in more people because human beings are sexual creatures and this is what they want to see. I can't imagine that changing unless you want to rewire the human brain.
I mean, yes and no. I guess I'm just saying, I think the level of sexualization breaches reality to a point that doesn't seem to make much sense when it comes to women. It just seems unnecessary.
But keep in mind, these are our fictional films we're talking about. We're talking about films about men who can shoot lasers from their eyes and they can fly in the air and they're fighting demons from other dimensions. So, I mean, if we're allowed to have that kind of unrealistic perspective of reality, then why can't we have an unrealistic sexual aspect of reality as well?
Well, because all of the unrealistic elements that are associated with male characters have to do with their strength or superpowers, and the unrealistic elements with respect to female characters have to do with how big their tits are and how tight their outfit is.
I mean, I look at the Superwoman TV show right now, and look at Wonder Woman, the film that came out recently, and I don't see any really big cleavage. They seem to have more natural features. It seems like we're going in a more positive direction.
I would agree with you there.
So, I mean, can you think of a superhero film? Sorry, go on.
Hold on a second. Our producer let me know the echo is actually coming from the both of you. Do either of you have headphones that you can, or earbuds or anything you can put in? Because it's...
Yeah, sure. I'll be right back.
Okay. Sorry.
Actually, good time for me to go ahead and read a couple of these super chats. One says, most males would be up in arms if they were judged as women are. The typical entitled male is just a butthurt snowflake. Okay.
There's that. Wait, what about butthurt snowflakes?
Men.
It said the typical.
Men are butthurt snowflakes.
Men.
driving to work, just wanted to send some love your way. Hashtag distracted while driving, and we'll get the other one at the end of the show. So thank you for those super chats, guys. We'll read all the rest of them at the end of the show. Okay, we were just talking about sexualized superhero characters, and I believe Nate, you were getting ready to make a point. If you want to pick back up on that. Can't hear you.
I can hear him.
Oh, I see. Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was muted there. Thank you. So the question I was going to ask Amraz is, can you think of a superhero film, like a mainstream superhero film that's come out in the past 2 or 3 years that has done any like strong sexualization of female characters? So it seems like most of the main female protagonists now have become a lot more, I guess, modest in their clothing and their design.
To be completely honest, I'm not a huge superhero movie fan. I don't know if you can see my picture, but like I'm a huge dork, so I'm more of a documentary person. But I don't disagree with you that that's true. I think certainly. There are a lot of elements that go into sexualization of superhero characters, and that goes into things like what superpowers they have, what their origin story is. Certain outfits are just one element. They're posing on promotional posters or in comic books. So, I mean, this isn't really my area of expertise, but I would agree with you that I think Wonder Woman was a good step. I liked everything I saw from that. I think her outfit was still a mini skirt and like a Princess Leia revamp situation, but I think it was practical because she had boots at least.
Do you guys think it's possible that the outfits are getting better in these movies and in the media and things like that because of feminism?
Absolutely. I mean, I know at least for me anyway, when Wonder Woman came out, that was something that a lot of my friends wanted to go see as a group of women. People brought their young daughters to see it. People felt really good about it coming out. and you know that she was such a strong character and such a strong human being in real life too. I think was very positive and empowering for a lot of women who hadn't seen that in superhero movies before.
I think you could argue that in. I would argue that in the Wonder Woman 2017 movie, the man, Chris Pine, was actually objectified more than Wonder Woman was. There's a part in the film where they're in a cave and she's eyeballing his junk and he's like, I am slightly above average. And it's just, you know, obviously it's meant to be eye candy there for the female viewer or the gay viewer, possibly. And throughout the entire film, Chris Pine and the rest of the other male characters, I mean, they're pretty useless compared to Wonder Woman, who just comes in there and kicks ass. So it seems like as far as superhero films going, we're going in a more positive feminist direction.
And do you think that that's because of feminism?
Do I think it's because of feminism? Possibly. Yeah, I think that these companies... It's really hard to say. I'd have to look down at the micro level and see, you know, which elements here and there contributed to that. I suppose the best answer to that would be ask the directors and the producers, you know, why they chose to go about it the way they did. I would imagine they just figured this would be the best way to market it and get the most people in the theaters to go and see the film. And obviously it worked. It was a very popular movie.
What about games, Imraz? Do you think that women are portrayed the same way in games, like or do you think they're over sexualized on that perspective?
Well, again, not totally my area of expertise, but from what I've seen, like, I mean, I'm going back to like Lara Croft. I would say certainly female characters are much more sexualized than male characters in games. I also think that gaming culture is primarily marketed toward males, which is an important point there, because you know it's true what Nate says, that you know part of the reason why this is happening is because this is what people want to see, but I think that there is a responsibility in society to make sure that we don't just continue to perpetuate things that can become harmful because we can make money off of them.
Do you see a problem with companies marketing towards men and trying to appeal to men?
No. I mean, no, insofar as that whatever they're doing to appeal to men isn't harmful to women.
So do you think that video games that show women in a sexual manner like Lara Croft are harmful to women?
I think that if I'm a young girl who wants to be a gamer, I have very few female role models in games that I want to emulate other than highly sexualized characters. And I think it's destructive to self-esteem. And I think it also, it institutionalizes patriarchal ideas about what it means to be strong and attractive and likable.
Well, I mean, if you look at Lara Croft in the past few video games, they've definitely changed her attire a lot. They've made her breasts smaller. They've given her a more natural form. I mean, if you want to talk about Lara Croft being sexualized, you'd have to go back like maybe the past like 8 years to find the really sexual versions of her. So another example
well, like
there,
said,
it just seems like
really not really like my realm, to be honest. I mean, I'm generalizing because I'm not a gamer.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Imraz. Can you talk to us about the, I know everybody speaks to different waves all the time, like, you know, third wave, fourth wave. I'm not even sure what wave we're at up to now. Do you like know the different waves, and can you kind of explain that to us?
Sure. So I will say that I'm very cautious about using the wave terminology, because I think although there is some historical reality to it, it's primarily used to as an insult for feminists. But with that being said, first wave feminism is your voters' rights feminists, your suffragettes, your Susan B. Anthony's, women who were in the very beginning of the movement, who said we should have a say, we should have the ability to own property, vote, have separate bank accounts, have autonomy over our medical decisions, marriage decisions, things like that. And many of those women were still extremely religious and conservative. Many of them would have been pro-life, so to speak. So it was really a movement about just having the right to exist as a being separate from your husband or father and participate in the society that you live in as an autonomous being. So it had a lot of value, but I think if you looked at first wave feminists to third wave feminists, they would have a lot of disagreement. Second wave feminism was the bra burners in the 60s and 70s. So there was much more focus on the sexual liberation of women, focusing on biology of women, their breasts, their vaginas, their reproductive health, abortion rights after Roe, and rape as a societal issue for the first time being called out. So rape culture is a term that you may have heard, and that was popularized in the 70s by second wave feminists, who basically said, rape is happening all over the place and everyone's ignoring it like it's just a normal part of life, and it shouldn't be, because we are our own beings and we shouldn't be subject to sexual assault. So that's where feminism really went from being about, I just have rights to, not only do I want to be my own human being, but you need to recognize that there are elements about me as a human that are distinctly different and need different rights than what men have, because I have different body parts and different ability to protect myself. And I have different needs. So I would say third wave feminism, I guess, probably started in the sectional, embraced the gay community, embraced racism and xenophobia as issues that are now taken on by a lot of feminists, and also where feminism started to faction out a lot as a result of that. Because you have some feminists or I would say those who would identify themselves as feminists that I would not consider feminists, who are not supportive of intersectionality. And then you also have extremists, you know, bordering on misandry, if you accept that as a term that exists. The men are trash crew. The women who really are seeking matriarchy or supremacy, which is not a primary goal of feminism as a foundation. So I think third wave feminism is often used as this sort of generalized term where, you know, you often hear, well, I was fine with feminism when it was just about wearing bras and getting equal pay. But now that you guys are hating men and, you know, wanting us all to have our dicks chopped off and blah, 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 like, I'm not cool with that. And the reality is that that's a really small section of feminism that, unfortunately, as with, you know, like all of the bad experiences get reviewed on Yelp, right? So like all of the shittiest feminists are the ones that people remember. I would say that we're in the third wave of feminism. Some people say that we've already reached the fourth or fifth wave, and they would characterize that as being 100% man hating, dick chopping off, rage people. I don't think we're there, but certainly there are people who would characterize that as where we are.
Yeah, you can't have our dicks. That we will. But
no, I don't want your dicks.
Do you have any? Do you have anything that you want to say based off of how she just answered that?
Boy, where do I begin? I guess I would start off by saying that I think that the problem is that when these movements expand so much, they're a lot more difficult to control. And when they're as big as they are, it can become corrosive. So, I mean, if you look on YouTube right now, there is basically an entire industry that has been built upon finding very horrible examples of feminism out there and then just making an entire living off responding to it. I guess you could argue that I've contributed to that partially. But, I mean, there are, mm-hmm. are compilation channels that that just go out there. There's one like called, I think, 50 Cent, for example, and other ones like that, or one called Wrecked Feminist Videos. And these people get millions and millions of views per video, just compiling different examples of women on college campuses, starting fires, throwing down trash cans, destroying property. And I wish there was some way that you could prevent those people from behaving in the way they are and just kind of refine the movement. But it seems like at this point, it's kind of spiraled out of control.
Well, I mean, I think that there are certainly going to be elements of any movement that are not representative of the whole. You know, I think, for instance, you know, Antifa is intended to be an anti-fascist organization that's entirely defensive. But some of those guys go out with baseball bats and smash people to bits. And that's how Antifa is perceived as an organization. You know, there may be some bad actors within Black Lives Matter, even though it's vast majority, you know, really well-intentioned activists. Mm-hmm. The way that I have thought about this, I mean, I think about this a lot because, if you look at my Twitter, I spend about 80% of my time defending feminism and 20% actually doing activism, which is frustrating for me. But I have also kind of taken on that responsibility as part of how I contribute. So I try to address stereotypes about feminism as part of the goals of my account. And I get a lot of stereotypes thrown at me. The running joke on my page is that at least once a day, someone will tell me that I think all men are rapists, even though I've mm-hmm. never said that ever. And I wouldn't ever say that. So what I try to do is, instead of saying like, hey, I'm not like that. I just try to continually educate people about what feminism really is, in hopes that if people have an understanding of what feminism means, which is, it's a very basic concept, you know, it's just treating men and women with equal respect. You know, equal legal rights is not the same, as we all know. And it's about listening to women speak, and it has nothing to do with harming men or wanting to control them or having an issue with men or being masculine, except to the extent that it's harmful to women. And I just try to explain to people. I mean, it's almost funny to me how often I have men comment on my account like, I hate feminists, but like, I think you're okay. And I'm like, but I am like the core, like I'm a core believer of feminism. Like what you don't like is these factions. So I'm trying as part of my activism goal to educate people. And also, you know, sometimes if you're a young woman and you want to participate in feminism, you can get sucked into some of these factions because that's just your perception of what feminism is. And I try to explain that, you know, if you are a woman who says like, I hate men, men are trash, I don't want anything to do with them, that's 100% not conducive to an egalitarian society. Like, you can't want to be equal with somebody that you hate. So I think that's how I try to address it as an issue is to just bring back the core values to distinguish myself from what I think is extremism.
Well, I think one of the main grievances that a lot of people have with modern day feminism is they see these women who I'm sure have very positive intentions, speaking about things that they are not totally knowledgeable about. They're trying to fight problems in the world, but they don't comprehend the environment they're trying to speak about. So one prominent feminist online is Nita Sarkeesian. She runs a website and YouTube channel called Feminist Frequency. And she had a series a while ago where she would talk about video games. And she would try to point out problems with the gaming industry and how women are portrayed in the gaming culture. But a lot of people, myself included, have pointed out that she simply misses the mark. She misconstrues information. She will misrepresent certain events and take things out of context to make things worse than what they actually are. So I think that doing that, you know, just misconstruing information, either because of malicious intent or ignorance, is very detrimental to the feminist movement. Or in this conversation right now, you brought up superhero movies, and then we delved into that for a while, and then later on you acknowledged that this is out of your element. And then later on we went on to video games and Lara Croft. We delved into that for a while, then you later on admitted this is out of your element. So I think it is important.
Well, in fairness, I started out the conversation with gaming by saying I don't really know anything about games, but
anyway. All right, well, I'm just trying to say that I think it is important to make sure that proper research is done into a topic before jumping into it. Otherwise, it's just going to make people frustrated because they're like, what are you talking about?
Well, so I want to jump in real quick to, since you brought up Anita Sarkeesian and YouTube, since you think that she kind of misrepresents and makes things out to be worse than they are, isn't that kind of what you do on your YouTube channel with feminism?
I misconstrue feminism?
I mean, kind of, yeah. I feel like you pick the worst elements, kind of like Emraz was talking about. You focus on the worst elements and not really the core of what the message is.
Well, if you look at some of my YouTube videos, I'll actually have a disclaimer. If you go to my playlist, and I have at the bottom of the screen on some of my videos, I will state that my videos are not intended to represent feminism as a whole. And here I am in this stream right now trying to clarify that as well. So, you know, if anybody's gotten the wrong impression from my content, I try to make it clear with my videos that I'm not trying to attack all of feminism, just the things that I find to be the bad elements of it. I think that there are good feminists out there. One example, I'm not sure how Emraz will feel about this woman, but have you ever heard of Christina Hoff Sommers?
Yes.
I have not.
And I think that there are also some different feminist YouTubers out there who I'd say make good content. For example, there's one woman called Claudia Brown. She has the channel Ranting Feminist. From what I've seen, she's a very reasonable person. So, I don't want to give off the impression with my content that I think all of feminism is this way.
Which parts do you focus on? Go ahead, Imran.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think it's noble of you to put a disclaimer on your videos, but I mean, I think you do have to take some responsibility for the fact that the vast majority of people who are viewing your videos are not taking in that disclaimer to any extent. And I'll give you an example of something that I saw today on my account so that I'm not attacking your content. So today, someone came on Twitter and at me and said, "Oh, Emraz thinks that all men are rapists." Again, classic, normal, happens every day. And I responded, as I always do, which is, "This is how you run a Twitter search. Run it and see if I've ever said that, and you will see that I have never said that." And when that person did that on their tweet, there was a slew of replies that were just horrific. Like, just, I mean, not surprising to me, but one of them was a picture of Auschwitz and suggesting that I should be sent to a gas chamber. And that person who said that to me commented to the person who replied with that and said, "Hey, like, that's taking it too far. I'm not cool with that. Like, don't post that." And my response to him was, "Well, not only did you mischaracterize how I feel, because I literally say every day that I don't feel this way on my account. It's like a running joke. But what you have to understand is that when you start the conversation with shit like that, people who are willing to say and do way worse consider you an ally. And so they will say and do worse, and they will feel supported by the content that you're creating. So it's important to be like, I have to be conscious of that too. Like, for instance, people always post stuff on my account like, oh, this guy just can't get laid, he must have a small dick. And like, I try to say like, hey, don't say that kind of stuff, because I don't support that as antagonistic and sexualizing on the opposite end. And so I do think it's important to take responsibility for your audience, because even if you don't intend something a certain way, like if you have a video that's like, oh, like look at this whack feminist who like has no idea what's going on, like most people aren't reading whack feminist who doesn't represent all of feminism but like is a super super weird faction of it, like they're just reading it as feminist, and then they're coming at me like, that you believe this, and I'm like, no, I don't.
Well, I will say that on my YouTube channel, there's a feature here on YouTube. It's called the YouTube blacklist, and you can actually make it so that certain words, like cunt, for example, will get blacklisted from the comment section. That comment will become invisible to the public eye, and I try to make sure any kind of threatening words like that do not get shown on my videos, because I don't want to have that kind of stuff promoted on my content. And on Facebook, if I have any threatening messages, any kind of hate speech being thrown around, you know, like saying kill women, any comments like that, I will make those comments disappear. So I do try my best to make sure that, you know, I don't want to make it so that, you know, controversial remarks are hidden, but anything that goes over the line, I'll definitely take care of that. And
why do you think people are posting comments like that on what you're posting? Like, what do you think it is about your content that would elicit that kind of response?
Oh, I don't think this is unique to me. I think this happens all over the internet. There's a thing about being anonymous where people will show their true colors. You know, if you're in the public eye, if you have your face shown like I do, or anybody in this show has right now, you know, you have to have that level of professionalism. But if you're behind the keyboard, if nobody can see who you are, you feel this level of freedom that you otherwise wouldn't feel. So people will feel comfortable drawing and making horrible images like the one that you mentioned. Someone made you in Auschwitz. Well, that isn't unique to you. People have drawn pornography of me having cum in my face. So later on, Kyle, if you want to go to that link... I've been drawn. Yes, I've been photoshopped as a dog humping somebody. So these kind of hateful messages. If you go to my videos on Islam, I've gotten threatened countless times by people for daring to criticize their religion, or also Christians too. I've gotten hate comments from Christians. So I think whenever you cover a controversial topic like this, this is inevitable. This is going to happen. It isn't exclusively a female problem.
But hate comments isn't really what hate.
A kind of ridiculous threats and hate comments. So go ahead.
Yeah, Kyle, I'm sure you've dealt with a lot of shit from people.
Mm-hmm. Hate comments isn't really what she's talking about. So she's talking about the comments that your content inspired people to say things like kill women or whatever. So I'm an anti-theist and I make anti-theist content. Okay, well, so I don't have people come onto my videos and say, kill all the religious people, because I don't make videos that inspire that kind of reaction in people. So I think that's where she's more getting at, not what kind of hate comments you get, but like the kind of comments where people basically show vitriol towards women and feminists because of your content.
Can you provide a single quote from any of my videos that could ever be construed as me thinking that women should all be killed?
Well, no, I don't think that's what she's asking.
I have gotten several.
So how could I be inspiring that if I'm not encouraging murdering people?
Yeah, we get those all the time. Like Steve and I get comments like that. From especially flat earthers, they seem to be the most vile, but. I'll get some people just, like he said, get behind a keyboard and feel like that's their moment. You know, they have to, actually there was one guy that, told me that I have, or he was saying, how do you feel now that you have like AIDS and your HIV, results came back positive? So people just leave vile comments that have nothing to do with, you know, what they're talking about in general.
I think this is simply the inevitability of the internet. This is the power of the, the information superhighway was the classic 90s term. People go on here, they know that they can get away with it, and as a result, they'll say this kind of stuff.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I gotta say, I kind of disagree to some extent. I mean, I don't disagree that your experiences are wrong or that what you're saying isn't generally true. But I think this is a good example of what I was trying to articulate earlier. So, I brought up the fact that I think there is something unique about the content that you're posting, also relative to the subject matter that you're posting about, that elicits a certain type of response. And Caitlin understood what I meant. But your response immediately redirected the question to your own experience and the type of comments that you personally get without taking meaning from what I'm saying, which is that there are certain things about hating women and hating feminists especially that elicit different type of response than what just hating what some guy said online does. And I think it's important to recognize that like in the same way that some people hate black people, like there are some people who really hate women. And when you start a conversation with like, look at this whack ass bitch, like that opens the door for those people to say all kinds of crazy shit. And it's something that I think people need to think more carefully about, because it's not the same. I mean, I don't like saying that because it feels weird to me. It feels isolating, but it is true. Like it's not the same. Women get harassed at a much higher level and with a much greater intensity, especially feminists.
My point was that this kind of hate on the internet is a two-way street. For every hate comment that may or may not be a result of my content, there'll also be hate comments directed at me or other people that agree with me. For example, let's look at Feminist Frequency, for example. She's a woman who's complained constantly about getting harassment on the internet. And despite all of this harassment, has it ultimately really affected her life? No. She goes to multiple different conferences and gives public speeches, and she's never been attacked yet. And yet you can look at somebody like Milo Yiannopoulos, who I disagree with many times, or someone like Sargon of Akkad, who I also have disagreements with. But these are people who have actually been attacked, both men. Milo Yiannopoulos will go speak at a college.
He talks all kinds of shit. Like, it's one thing to
just exist. So people should be attacked if they say certain things?
Yeah, actually. I mean, I think I don't condone violence against anyone, but what I'm saying is the distinction is that I'm being attacked for existing. And Milo is being attacked because he's a fucking asshole. Like, there's a difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a material difference. Literally harassing people and calling them pieces of shit and like telling people that they deserve violence against them. And so, yeah, like, I don't want anyone to be attacked, but it makes sense. Like, I'm just out here like, hey guys, like, can we get some Republican support for the domestic violence re-up on the bill? And people are like, fuck you, feminists, you hate men. Like, that's a material distinction that I think is important to address.
But don't you think that this kind of attacking people like Sargon of Akkad, he'll speak at like some kind of libertarian convention, and Tifa will come into the room and jump on stage and begin trying to attack them, or Milo will be giving a speech. Don't you think that this kind of behavior is what gives people a negative image? Shouldn't we try to regulate our emotions and just try to have a civil conversation? And that way people will look at feminism and say, hey, these people have some good points, rather than saying, look at these people getting violent.
No, absolutely. I mean, I can't think of any examples outside of TERFs, who I don't consider feminists, of feminists being violent against anyone. Certainly not myself. I wouldn't condone that at all. So, I mean, I don't know if you are relating this specifically to feminism or just people who have attacked people like Milo, but I do think that there is a material distinction between being attacked because you're an antagonist asshole and being attacked for existing.
Are you familiar? Sorry. Go on.
No, go ahead.
Are you familiar with Warren Farrell?
I am not.
Well, you said you can't think of any examples of a feminist attacking somebody. I would recommend you look up a YouTube video sometime called Warren Farrell Protest at University of Toronto Full Version. And this shows this group of feminists outside of this college where Warren Farrell, this egalitarian, you might say, was speaking about men's issues. And they were trying to blockade the doors so that people couldn't come in and hear him speak. There were police officers that were being attacked, and there was a lot of shouting back and forth. Men who wanted to attend were called fucking scum and rape apologists, even though Warren Farrell was never trying to promote rape apologism. So right there, I think that is a prime example of that going on.
Well, I think it's a prime example, but it's also a prime example of what I'm saying, because I said I can't think of any instances of feminists being aggressive. And you can name one specifically that of which you have the name of the video memorized. There was at least 200 marches of millions of women 2 years in a row without a single incident. There are women's conventions, protests all over the country all the time. In New York, we have them every weekend. And so I don't think that one instance of violence is a particularly instructive example. When you have literally millions and millions of feminists who are passively protesting, like, should literally just be treated equally. I think honestly, your example kind of articulates my point, which is that it's so unusual for feminists to become violent like that, that when it happens, it's memorable.
Emraz, don't you think it's kind of important, though, as a feminist, that when things like this happen, like Nate's talking about, that those kind of actions are condemned by more reasonable feminists? Because, I mean, that kind of behavior is not appropriate. It's not acceptable. And I think that the majority of feminists don't think that way. So there are some, sure. But I do think it's important that, just like we would ask, like, you know, good cops to condemn bad cops, and, you know, Catholics who don't rape kids to condemn, you know, priests who do. Don't you think it's important that feminists condemn that kind of behavior?
100%. And an example of that, not particular to violence, but just this past week, if you've been watching the news, you probably heard about Asia Argento, she was a very prominent voice in the Me Too movement, and it came out that she had made a hush payment, so to speak, to a 17-year-old boy who she sexually assaulted, which is completely inconsistent with everything that Me Too stands for. And it was hugely disappointing and really kind of devastating for people in the Me Too movement who, you know, trusted her and felt like she was genuine in her commitment to the movement. And what I felt was most important as soon as I heard what happened was to say that if we are genuine about this movement, the first thing that we have to do is believe Asia Argento's victim, support him, and condemn her behavior. Because if we don't do that, there is no integrity in this movement. And I think that's the only way that you can be taken seriously in any movement, is if you maintain your principles, even when it's uncomfortable for you.
And then I applaud you for that. I'm glad that you're willing to police a movement that you were part of. But unfortunately, some of the louder voices in the movement, like Rose McGowan, when that story first broke, her reaction wasn't to say this is disgusting behavior. Her reaction was to say, be gentle. So it seems like when a woman is the one being accused, there is a double standard that's presented by a lot of the larger voices out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that her comment was mostly directed toward her personal relationship with Aisha, but I would agree that her position as a representative versus just like another human being who happens to be friends with this human being, she could have handled that a lot better. I would have handled it differently and did handle it differently.
I guess one comment I could add in here is that one movement that I identify as being a part of is the atheist movement. I identify as being an anti-theist. And while this movement has its problems, I've yet to see anything on the same scale as with other movements out there. It seems like for the most part, most atheist activists are very civil. They're not starting fires. They're not attacking speakers. And when there have been accusations of sexual assault, there have been, I think, at least two atheist public speakers who were recently accused of rape. The result wasn't to protect them in any way. The result was to say, get the heck out of here. We don't want to have that kind of sexual assault associated with our movement. So I guess I would say that for the feminist movement, maybe they should adopt more of what the atheist movement has been doing, and that way it could probably better the public image.
And you mean in terms of outing bad actors?
Yes, outing bad actors, like, and trying to self-police in a way where there's no longer these problems going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I mean, I think TERFs, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that term, but TERFs are trans exclusionary radical feminists. And they are biology exclusive feminists who believe that only women, that is people who were born with two X chromosomes, can participate in feminism. And while that as a ideology is problematic for me foundationally, more problematic for me is that for whatever reason, they also tend to be particularly venomous in the way that they pursue their activism. And I have, like, for instance, when TERFs come on my Twitter page, I block them because they are horrible. Like, they're horrible. They harass everyone. And they are, I have yet to interact with a TERF that is okay with me not being one. And for all of those reasons, I don't consider TERFs feminists. And I think among mainstream feminists, that's a very standard view. One of my mentors and someone that I communicate with a lot is Clementine Ford. And she is, at least among men, sort of universally viewed as being extremely radical. And her view on TERFs is the same as mine. And I have long said that I wish that we could rename the label, because I think it's deceiving. I don't think TERFs are feminists, and I try to say so at any opportunity, but, you know, not so much to the extent that I'm being, you know, directing hate at them, but anytime the topic is brought to me, you know, I try to distance myself as a mainstream feminist from that ideology. And I think for me, the challenge there is that TERFs don't want to not be feminists. And that's a difficult thing to deal with in a movement, is like, how do I kick you out when I don't have the authority to kick you out and you don't want to be kicked out? That's something that I think is a real struggle in feminism right now.
So many names. It seems like every week I learn of a new name. TERF is this week's.
TERF and SWERF.
I hadn't heard that.
I have never heard that, no.
So you have SWERF, yeah, too. Those are sex worker exclusionary radical feminists.
That's wild. What are you going to say, Casey?
I was going to say I disagree slightly with Emraz on this because I try really hard not to fall into the no true Scotsman fallacy. I do think they are feminists. I don't think they represent feminism. They're just different. They're a different, like you said, kind of a sect. They're a different. They just think differently. I don't think they represent feminism, but as a movement. But I do think they are feminists, which is unfortunate because I think those kind of people do more harm to the movement, far more harm to the movement than they do any good for anything at all.
Brittany Simon says that TERFs are OG feminists.
Well,
okay.
I mean, I would disagree with that on a fundamental level because trans activism has only been an issue, you know, within maybe the past 20 years.
Well, you'll find no disagreement with me. I think that TERFs are also reprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of why I struggle with TERFs is that what I have found, it took a long time for me to be willing to say aloud, for instance, like on my Twitter account to 60,000 followers, like, TERFs are not feminists. Like, I remember the day I tweeted it out, like, just that sentence, like, I'm liberating myself from this feeling. Because I don't want to exclude anyone from being a part of a movement that is very closely held for me. But what I have seen from that movement is that there's an expression of a belief as a foundational principle, but that's not what the actions are being founded on. You know, they can say that they are just really interested in making sure that women and girls are prioritized, but from everything that I've seen, you know, it's mostly just hatred toward trans people, hatred toward feminists who are not TERFs, and inciting violent battles on social media and in person, and separating marches where only TERFs are allowed or TERFs are not allowed. I don't feel that they have centered anything in their movement other than calling themselves TERFs.
I agree with you on that, Emraz. I think that they are, I think essentially they're just bigoted and discriminatory. Like, I think that's mainly what they are. And it is unfortunate that they call themselves feminists in that way, because I feel like they simply discriminate against trans people, trans women.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the best perspectives I heard on that was relayed to me by Clementine Ford, and I can't remember who said it originally, but essentially that feminists, like the perspective that TERFs are OG feminists is funny to me because feminists originated as trying to distinguish women as being more than just a vagina or a baby holder or a mother, as more than just their biology, and as autonomous human beings who can think and work and provide extreme value to society at the same level as men. And what TERFs are doing is reductively circling back to defining women exclusively by their biology, as the most important factor of their existence. And I think that that's antithetical to moving forward as a feminist.
Okay. Anything you want to add in on that, Nate? We go to us from the audience.
Are you talking to me? Sorry, I can barely hear you, Kyle. I don't think so.
Nate, can you try talking again? We can't hear you.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Oh, sorry, made it again. Yeah, I said I don't think I can add much more to that conversation. I think that TERFs are horrible as well, so yeah.
Okay.
Agree to agree.
Well, we all agree TERFs are terrible.
I'm gonna have to look into them to this. I think we should get one on and explore this a little bit more. I'm always slightly oddly excited when I find a new group. Like, I remember how happy I got when I found out what incels were, but still to this day can't get one to come on the show.
Well, I know their website, isn't it incels.me? Just go on their forums, I guess, and say that, hey, we have this show. Come on in.
I did. They kicked me out because they said no one was interested in me exploiting them.
So,
exploiting them?
You know what, I said to them, of course. I was like, dude, you need to get laid and chill out. Of course, that was the wrong thing to
Yeah, that's like kind of the whole issue.
The first question we'll go to is for you, Imraz. Can men be feminist?
Yes, absolutely. Another reason, for instance, why I don't agree with TERFs. I think men can absolutely be feminist because the foundation of feminism is that men and women are treated with equal respect and dignity. And if you are a man who believes that is true and is participating in making that happen, and what I mean by that is actively working against structures and behavior that marginalize women, you are a feminist.
Okay. What do you think, Nate? Can men be feminist?
I'm a feminist, so yes.
Wait, what?
Yeah,
I'm
what?
A feminist, so yes.
It's really
am I
weird.
Not coming through clear? I said that I am a feminist, so yes, we can be.
Awesome.
No, I mean, we heard you. We're just confused. That's all.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Imran, this was something that up earlier. Your response to this, but somebody asked earlier if you agree on so much, why do Nate as, what was it, rabid? Too far, but how was it that you worded it on Twitter?
It was something like that. I may have said virulent, or I don't know. It was a characterization of him as an extremely anti-feminist person.
Yeah. Okay. They want to know why. Because it seems like Reed mostly to know. I think they want to know why if you categorize him as that. I think that's a better question.
Well, I think that my perception of him is not that now, having had this conversation. I mean, I still find some of your perspectives and content very problematic, but I would say that my perspective was drawn from going to your YouTube page, which is obviously, you know, well curated and something that you invest time and mental effort into creating. And that you have taken the time to create a playlist of multiple videos that attack feminism in a way that is mocking, dismissive, mean, not representative, hyperbolic, mischaracterizing, all things that I would associate with someone who is extremely anti-feminist to the point that they would spend that much time creating that content, curating it, and maintaining it at that level.
Well, at the end of the day, I just try to make content that I personally find interesting, and I think that there is a lot of interesting elements of the feminist movement, regardless of whether or not they're the majority or the minority. They're definitely a vocal minority at the very least, and I find a lot of it simply amusing to look at and poke fun at, so... Yeah, at the end of the day, I'm here to make content that entertains people, and people obviously enjoy my content, so I'm happy with what I've put out.
Do a follow-up on that,
Imraz? Despite the damage it might do?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, at what point is entertaining people by tearing down a movement that's centered on women's rights, like, not problematic for you?
Well, I question the ability to quantify how much damage you think my series has done. It seems like this is more based off of speculation than any real hard data.
Well, I mean, and you're the sum of cumulative parts, right? Like, you're a participant in an entire culture of this stuff. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, even if your videos aren't the worst of the worst, you are an active, you know, known member of the YouTube community, that people are going to your account to look for content, And if you're saying it's okay to be entertained by making fun of feminists, you're one of, you know, thousands of people who are saying that, that are just reinforcing that idea. So even if you, I mean, it's the same as like it, I'm not calling you a racist, and I'm not saying you're on that level, but like, if you're a racist person and you mm-hmm. participate in racism simply by occasionally using the N-word, like, you're still participating in racism and you're still perpetuating it, regardless of whether you can quantify the level of harm.
I do not use that on my YouTube channel.
Well, I mean, again, I'm drawing an analogy here, but I just think you can't put out anti-feminist content and then say, but like, how many people is it really affecting? I mean, does it matter? If it's one person, it's harmful. You know, like,
isn't it good to put out bad evidence?
Well, I think you can put out the you can point out the bad elements the way that you have today, which is to say, hey, I think these elements of feminism are problematic. Here are some suggestions that I have based on my observations. I found all of that to be productive and respectful. I don't think any of your videos address feminism in that way.
Well, I mean, one of my videos.
That's not going to get 200,000 subscribers either.
What? Well, I try to be entertaining and also factual. So, for example, one of my videos was attacking the fat acceptance element of feminism. There's a movement within fat acceptance called Health at Every Size, where these people believe that it doesn't matter how heavy you are, how much fat you have, you can be just as healthy as a person of a normal weight type. So my video was pointing out that yes, being obese, being overweight does have detrimental health effects, and that it doesn't only affect you on a personal level, but it can also affect society. It makes the taxes go up. It makes us have to use more gasoline because naturally cars, if there's more weight in the car, they have to use more gasoline.
Are you serious right now?
No, this is true. There's actually a movement called Health at Every Size, and this is what they believe, that they can be healthy.
The movement. I feel like that's you're reaching with that, but okay. The gasoline thing is funny.
There actually is a study that I link in the description that it shows that, yes, fatter people, and you can look up the statistics on the CDC, and it shows that every single year, a larger percentage of the U.S. population is getting heavier. And as that happens, we're going to see more and more people, getting overweight.
Using more gasoline?
Yes, using more gasoline.
That is actually true. The gasoline thing is actually true.
If you want, I have it linked right now. I can give it to you, and you can look it up for yourself.
It is true. I'm sorry. Continue.
All right. So I'm not logged into my YouTube account now. I'll put it in the chat, and then somebody else can link it into the live stream chat. There is a short summary of the study, and here is the actual study that shows that, yes, being heavier does make us use more gasoline.
Yeah, that is true. There's the link for it. So would you agree with that, Imraz, though, that the things he's pointing out in that video with the what is it, Help at Every Size? Is that the name of the movement?
There's fat acceptance.
I haven't watched the video itself, but as I recall, like, just looking at the thumbnails on the videos that you post, the cover page is always like some sort of like super mocking, it's definitely I understand why you're doing it. Exactly what Caitlin said. Like it gets.
I'm not going to deny why I do it. This is the industry that I'm part of. This is, you have to play a bit dirty if you want to get the viewership.
I don't post shitty pictures of men, like, in order to be a feminist, you know what I'm saying? So I understand what you're saying, like, that your market is this, but that doesn't have to be your market. Like, I that's your choice to market to those people. But like you said, there are feminist accounts that you find engaging. And I don't see them posting videos of men like making fun of them. I don't see that happening. So I think it's a unique element when it comes to discussing a women's movement. It's about making us look silly, making us look hysterical, hyperbolic, overbearing, unlikable, unattractive. Like, those are how people criticize feminists, and that's all very patriarchal. Like, if you want to have a conversation, I do think that bad acceptance is even. Like, this conversation is productive, but this isn't what you're posting. You know what I mean? Like, you aren't posting, like, videos of you discussing, you know, things that you've observed in feminism and how you feel like it's problematic. Like, you're posting.
But you judged my video just off the thumbnail and the title. You didn't actually bother watching it, to your own admission.
Yeah, because the thumbnail was offensive.
But and to be, so but to be fair, also, not even have a conversation tonight with people that he goes after either. Like the people in the women that are in those videos are, like we were talking about earlier, the outliers, the ones that are the vocal minority in the group. I think if he had one of those in this comment, it wouldn't be as productive. It would kind of go in a different direction. You know what I mean?
Well, yes, but I mean, the point that I'm making is, like, this style of criticism, right? Like I criticize men. Like, I do it all the time. I criticize how men perceive me, the way that they interact with me. I draw attention to it on my account all the time just to say, like, look at what you're doing. You're doing it. Like, all the time I'll post something like, why do you guys keep doing this? And then someone will literally comment doing it, like, without even realizing that they're doing it. And so, like, I'm willing to do that kind of stuff. I'm not willing to post things like, ugh, men are, like, so disgusting. They never shower. They're so smelly. They're so gross. Oh, they're, like, animals. They're, like, cavemen. Like, all, you know, I don't post that kind of content because, like, that's not how I address my issues with men. Like, all the time, the criticisms of women are, you're unattractive. You can't get a man to love you. You're screeching in my ear. You're annoying, you're silly, you're stupid, like, and that is absolutely the market that you're targeting with the style of videos that you're making. So, like, even
yeah, but if I've never said all women can't get laid or that they smell bad or that they all look ugly. I'm attacking these particular elements and saying this element of feminism is this or that.
Well, I mean, we can certainly agree to disagree. Like, I think stylistically, there's absolutely a difference between saying, like, this is my valid criticism of this particular movement, and, like, here's a video of a bunch of purple-haired lesbians, like, doing something dumb, and look how dumb they are. Like, that's a different style of criticism, and it's. You know, like, you can't deny that, like, if you see a video like the one you mentioned of these feminists being violent at the particular speaker's event, like, those are gold for you. And you know they are. Like, you know that kind of stuff is exactly what you love to find because it plays into the picture that you're trying to paint. And what I'm saying is, like, I find that offensive because I'm not trying to portray men as anything other than what they are. And I don't need to be offensive to call out problematic things, just as there are problematic things in feminism also. But why is it
that I cannot find these examples of people behaving irrationally and violently in many other movements? Like, again, going back to the atheist example, I cannot find many examples of this thing happening, at least not on the same caliber as I see it happening in different elements of the feminist movement. Or even in the men's rights movement. I mean, yes, there are some cringe, definitely.
The men's rights movement. Men's rights movement is a misogynist movement. Like, it's not a movement. Men have their rights. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, if you search MAGATOW, for instance, on Twitter.
Well, MGTOW is cringe. MGTOW is definitely cringe.
Well, like, that's MRAs. Like, that's what it is. So I mean, I think, like, atheists are not violent because, like, by nature, like, I'm also an atheist. Like, it's just the ability to not believe in anything. Like, it's like I just don't want to participate, and I don't want you to force me to participate. Like, that is by nature a passive cause. if you're asserting your desire to have rights, like there are going to be times when you overassert that. I don't condone that. And I would condemn it to any extent. And I do condemn it when I see it on my timeline. And I have actually posted many times toward men who will like get up in the comments of like if some MRA says something mean to me and the guys will be like, hey, like, fuck you. And I'm like, just like, don't do that. Like, that's not what I want. That's not the dialogue that I want to support. I think you will see that in any movement that is asserting rights.
So you're saying that you go on Twitter and you will screenshot different messages you get from people on Twitter?
Will I screenshot them?
Do you retweet them or screenshot them? But point being, you draw attention to angry messages you get on social media.
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, isn't that kind of the same as what I do, where I'll draw attention to the negative aspects of a movement, you draw negative attention to the bad aspects of MRAs?
If I retweet a comment from an MRA, like if somebody says, hey, you think all men are rapists, when I retweet it or quote tweet it, I say, no, I don't believe that. I don't say, oh, God, you guys are so fucking ridiculous. Like, there's a difference between those two styles of criticism.
But didn't you say that MGTOW and MRAs are a ridiculous movement a moment ago?
They are.
So you don't think there's any...
They're a movement for nothing. MRAs, you know? Yeah, I mean, a men's rights movement is like... I mean, men have their rights. Like, what rights do men not have?
Well, a couple of examples. I know this is kind of stereotypical, but I do think that male circumcision is a problem that we need to focus on, just as much as FGM is a problem as well. I do think that there is some bias in the courts when it comes to child custody. And aside from that, I think that we need to deal with the problem of false rape accusations. Now, as to the scale of false rape accusations, I'm not totally sure the scale, but I do think that, you know, I'm an atheist, I care about science, and the scientific method says that the burden of proof is on the person making the accusation. So if you're making the accusation that somebody raped somebody, then provide the proof that they did that.
I don't have an issue with that statement.
I'm sorry, what was that?
No, let's.
I don't take issue.
Okay, so would you agree that those are men's rights issues that should be addressed?
I guess I would say I think those are men's issues. But I think the distinction is that every action that I have seen from a men's rights activist, and I have challenged many of them to prove me wrong, is not men's rights activism, but anti-feminism. And I don't understand why that is, because there's nothing about me asserting my rights that is anti-men. But it's seemingly like if men want to advocate against circumcision, that's fine, do it. Like, and I would support that. Like, I'm fine with that. I just as I support advocacy for sexual assault against men, domestic violence against men, like, I'm totally fine with that. I'm a lawyer, so like to the extent that the family court system is unjust, which I think there are reasons for that that go a lot deeper than what people are willing to admit, we should address that, absolutely. But I don't understand why MRAs are anti-feminist, because if it's really about rights, then just get your rights. Like, just do that.
Okay. I think part of it is that they try to talk about the rights and they end up getting countered by self-described feminists. So they feel like they're getting pushback because I'm trying to speak out. I would recommend, are you familiar with a documentary called The Red Pill?
Sorry, that was audible. My bad.
Yeah.
I take it you're not a fan of that documentary.
Well, she has a long-standing feud with one of the individuals in the Red Pill.
So would that be the documentary, the woman speaking at the beginning of the documentary?
Yeah, there's an individual in the actual documentary that Casey's had a long-standing feud with. So that was the audible, "Oh Lord,"
Oh, no. Well, I will not deny that there are some people that were featured in that documentary which I have disagreements with. I can't think of his name right now. I can't think of it right at the moment. But he's this guy. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, Dean Esme, he's this guy who was an atheist. He turned into this Christian apologist guy. He's a very cringy individual, but I'd say for the most part, that documentary did point out some legitimate issues that men do face in America. And it does show how there is pushback by certain feminists to men trying to achieve these rights.
Did you see how big...
I actually agree with you, Nate.
When you said cringe?
I agree with you on that. There are men's rights issues that do need to be addressed. However, I agree with Emraz. That does not require them to be anti-feminist. So... it's kind of like they do have some things. Like I completely agree with the injustices in the court system. There are other reasons behind that, but I think some of the reasons behind that are also kind of counter to the feminist movement, the whole idea that the mother is automatically the best parent for the child. That's ridiculous.
I think that should be between the two partners and say, hey, do you want to be the housemaker? Do you want to go to the job? Do you both want to go to the job? I don't think that men or women should be default put into a certain category. It's up to the individual what they want to do with their life.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And sometimes men and women can't come to an agreement on that. And generally the court system sides with the woman generally. So I think that is an issue that needs to be addressed, but that doesn't mean that they have to be anti-feminist, and they are.
We need
from what I've seen, a lot of... Sorry,
we're coming up on the two-hour mark, so we're going to need to wrap up here. That's fine. I'm gonna read off the rest of these super chats really quick, and then we're going to give both of you a chance to wrap up your points. Any last thoughts? Also, I believe that we are going to have... A kind of a follow-up after show to open it up to anybody who would like to come on. We're going to do that at 10:30. Steve will be jumping in. Casey, Nate, Emraz, you're all welcome to join. We usually have follow-up shows when we have deep subject matter like this, so that people that are watching that want to come in and kind of talk about it and give their point of view. So it's a really kind of cool way to get involved. So you're all invited to that if you want to. I don't know what you've got going on, but you can do that. Also, when we end this, jump over to Sirius the Skeptics channel real quick. He's having a conversation on the history of the flat Earth, so that should be awesome. This says, "Play the new Tomb Raider. She is a hardcore killer that puts any action hero guy to shame. It's actually kind of scary, but still fun." The next one says, "Saying most feminists don't know what they're talking about is hyperbolic bullshit." Next one says, "Nate, it sounds like you just want to police overreachers and outliers of feminism, not the movement itself." I'll let you respond to that.
It seems like I want to police over, what was it again?
Yeah, it says you want to police the overreachers and outliers. Basically, you want to try to be the police over the ones that you talk about on your videos, the ones that are the vocal minority.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I describe it like that. It's just me trying to point out, ultimately, at the end of the day, people will do what they want to do. I'm not going to say you can't behave that way. I'm just trying to point out, hey, what you're doing is probably counterproductive, and you should try to change your strategy if you want to win. I mean, we can look at the past several years and feminism has lost a lot of ground, at least in the public perception. We can see that feminists have become a laughingstock in many ways. Now, do I think that's fair? Not necessarily. But I do think that there needs to be some kind of self-critique and point out these bad elements to a higher degree, not just TERFs, but other elements as well. And that way, maybe we would see some more common ground.
Okay, and then last comment. This one's for, I believe it's for Imraz. It says, men use power for sex. Women use sex for power. Why is one wrong and not the other?
I would disagree that women use sex for power. But to the extent that women do use sex for power, they do so because their sexuality is the only power that is available to them in a male-dominated society.
Okay. All right. Now we'll give you guys the last your thoughts. Again, let everybody know where they can find you. I want to personally thank both of you for coming in. This was a great talk, and it went in a different direction than I thought it would. I thought it would be a lot more hostile and not as productive as it was. So, very nice. So, ladies first, I'm going to wrap up your thoughts and let everybody know where to find you.
Sure, I'll go first. So, to kind of piggyback on what you just said, I think that there is a lot more common ground between feminism, those who might characterize themselves as anti-feminist, than what people perceive. And I wish that people were more willing to have these types of conversations, because so often feminism is characterized as all of its bad actors. And even if you accept all of those things as true, if you are an anti-feminist, you are saying that you are anti a women's rights movement. And I think people need to examine that position more carefully. I'm not saying that if we are a movement for women's rights that's violent or ineffective, that we should still get support because of the goal. But what I am saying is I think people lose sight of what the goal of feminism is and get caught up on these sort of, you know, clickbaity factionality elements. And, you know, I personally, as a feminist, am working toward recentering the dialogue on what our goals are, and hope that other feminists are willing to do that too. But I also wish that people were not so eager to disregard the movement.
Okay. And you can find more of the Feminist Next Door at Imraz on Twitter. So make sure you go follow her. All right. Nate talks to you. Whenever you're ready.
Yes. I guess my final thoughts would be that I think one of the main reasons why we're having these arguments between feminists and self-described anti-feminists or MRAs or whatever other groups you want to point out, I think it all boils down to simply a lack of communication. I think that if more people sat down and had conversations like what we're having right now, we'd realize that we have more in common than we actually think. So I'm happy to have been part of this conversation. I think it was productive, and I'm glad to have been part of it.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing it. You want to let everybody know where they can find you on YouTube and Twitter?
Yeah, sure. So all my social media, be it Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, everything is just Nate Talks to You. So if you want to check out more of my stuff, yeah, just go there and I'll talk to you.
Awesome. All right, Casey, do you have any last parting words before we close out?
Not really. I think this went great, and thank you both for coming on. I think it was a good talk. I didn't think it would be a dumpster fire, but I didn't think it would be as reasonable as it was either. So thank you guys both for having a conversation where, you know, you kind of got to see each other's perspective a little better.
This happened to us last time with Sargon and Brittany Simon. We thought that was going to be Brittany,
with Brittany and Carl, the same thing happened. I think it's us, Kyle. You think it's us?
It has to be. It has to be.
Do you want this shit show to happen?
Sometimes.
we can throw down if you want. Like, I'm fine. If you put me on an MRA or a
well, and guys, let me put this out there to you. If you want to be on the part of the after show, we have we use Zoom for that. So we have up to 100 people. Not that we're going to take 100 people, but if you are a feminist or very strong and, you know, vocally in that way, or somebody who is anti-feminist and you have always wanted to ask, you know, anybody these kind of questions or talk to one, please contact me or Steve. We will get you the link for that. I will give Nate and Imraz, if you already have the link, we'll give you two the link in case you want to. You don't have to. You want to come in and chill and answer some questions. That will be cool. But we're going to start that at 10:45, guys. Until then, go check out Cyrus the Skeptic. He's talking flat earth. And if not, we'll see you tomorrow at 8 p.m. for Witnessing Apollo. Have a good night. We'll see you in 45 minutes.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.